Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome in to episode 287 of the Sources Say podcast, your go-to Kentucky basketball and recruiting podcast on the growing KSR podcast network, presented by Justice Dental. We've got a big show breaking down Kentucky's exhibition opening win versus Georgetown. We'll also talk about Orlando Antigua and some comments that he made to the media today as Kentucky gears up for its final tune-up. Before the regular season starts next week, Kentucky will host Kentucky State at Rupp Arena Thursday. But before we get started, a quick message from our friends at Justice Dental. Sources Say is presented by the great team at Justice Dental. Visit one of their two Lexington locations by scheduling an appointment online at justicedental.com or by calling or texting 859-543-0700. Dr. Thompson, Dr. Justice, and their team look forward to seeing you soon. I'm your host, Sean Smith, joined once again by my guy, Zach Gagan of Kentucky Sports Radio. Zach, back for round two.
Back for round two, and better than ever. So Jack Pilgrim better. I think his seat's getting a little warm, so he better shove that baby to the side and get back into the game here.
And I mean, we had a good episode last week. I thought so.
Yeah,
I thought it was a good flow. We talked a lot about what we're expecting to see from Kentucky at Rupp Arena, and the result is what we expected. Mm-hmm. Tight game at halftime. I mean, it was close. It was Georgetown come out, play with a lot of energy. And I think that's the probably the takeaway from the first half there. I didn't overreact to what we saw just because it is exhibition season. It is a brand new group of Kentucky players. I know we got to see them in Canada. We saw them at the Blue-White game. But getting out there, playing against some other guys at Rupp Arena for the first time in something that feels like real season basketball, I think there were some nerves there. But Kentucky did get the win. And look, it was a lot cleaner than some of the exhibition I saw last year. Kentucky struggled to score the ball in an exhibition at Rupp Arena a year ago. So that was not a problem. On Friday night, they put up 92 points, won 92-69, took care of business in the second half, got off to a good start there, and then kind of rode that momentum home, Zach. Just some initial takeaiways before we really dive into some things.
Yeah, I'll be quite honest with you. I honestly forget everything we said 7 days ago. But I do remember one of the main things was we were kind of worried about the defense. I think the main thing I wanted to see was Georgetown not score 80 points. They had 69. It looks like they split right down the middle, both halves, 34 and 35. I think we wanted them to get maybe up 33, something like that around there. They ended up shooting 22. So it was a little bit low in that. It definitely just took them a while to get rolling. I think that was kind of the main thing. And I think that had more to do with Georgetown's approach as opposed to Kentucky's approach, because you had 10 of 12 kids on that team, or I might be 10, maybe 9, 8, something like that. But the majority of that team was Kentucky-grown kids, and a lot of them might have been playing in Rupp Arena for the first time. And when you get an opportunity like that, you're going to come out and you're going to try and smack these kids in the face. And I say kids because Kentucky was rolling out, 5, 6 freshmen for that game, and they clearly weren't necessarily, I don't want to say underprepared, but that was definitely a welcome to college basketball moment for them, that, even an NAIA team that's as good as them, they can come out and they can hang with you. So you have to, be locked in. And I think that in that sense, that first half was a good learning experience for Kentucky, because then we saw at halftime that it was a big thing in the post-game press. You probably remember, Sean, where Cal was like, "I'm loving this." As he came into the locker room, he said, "I'm loving all this stuff." And normally I take that stuff with a grain of salt when he says something like that. But then Jordan Burke said the exact same thing. He said, "Cal came in, he's like, I'm loving this. I love this thing." And then all the guys just kind of got hyped up. They got themselves in the zone. You had the vets kind of settle everyone down. And then you really saw what Kentucky can kind of do in that second half. And, we heard them celebrating in the locker room. They were playing Meek Mill the whole time. So I think it was the second half was definitely more of what we were expecting. I don't think we can really take, too much long-term out of this or anything, just because there's no seven-footers and whatnot. But overall, I was, the second half I was impressed with. So,
yeah, there's no doubt that they need their interior. And I mean, I know that we've for months now have kind of not really downplayed it, but we've talked about you know, what Kentucky has to do to survive without it. And we know that that's still something that they have to do in not only Thursday, but in the next week when the real stuff starts, and probably even into the middle of the month when they play Kansas at the Champions Classic. They've got to find a way to survive it, get some guys back, get them healthy. But you mentioned the veterans really settling them in, and they did. I mean, Trey Mitchell, that addition in the summer was massive. We know how big it was, but you're seeing now just how important he is to this roster. The way that they're using him in the middle of the floor, stretching the floor, shooting the three. I think he was 4 or 5 from three-point range, and it led to me tweeting out during the game that if you could get an over-under prop on him for what his season three-point line would be. I think his career high is 37 his freshman season at UMass. He had 36 last year at West Virginia. He's going over that number this year, Zach. I'm not saying he's going to shoot, going to knock down 60 or 70 threes, but I think that gets into the 40s or maybe even approaches 50, just because I think he's going to have to take shots for this team, especially without the bigs. The way the floor is going to be spaced here for a couple of weeks, I think he's up over 10 when you combine the exhibitions. I don't know the exact number from Canada and here, but he's well over 10 made threes in 5 games. So that to me is something you're going to see from him: his rebounding, his passing, his putting the ball in the basket. He had some blocks. You have the stats pulled up right there in front of you.
Yeah,
what was his block total?
I think I think he had 3, but let me double check here.
I think so.
3 blocks and a steal. So 4 stocks.
Yeah. So it completely impacted the game in all areas Friday night for Kentucky. And he, where I mentioned some nerves and maybe some just, oh, this is my first college basketball game officially, he was a guy that looked relaxed, looked comfortable. And I think that's going to be something that's going to kind of just set the tone for them over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. Even in the first half, you know, when they weren't rolling very well, you know, Reeves had 8 points. He was 4 of 8. Trey had 5 and 5 at half. So those guys definitely, you know, just calmed everything down a little bit, you know, let them know like, hey, you did this exact same thing in Canada for 4 straight games and y'all did fine. So, you know, just kind of calm down, chill out. We'll get it taken care of. One guy who really didn't have, I mean, he kind of struggled in the first half, not nearly as much as some of the others, I thought, like Justin and DJ, but Rob kind of had a really good game just all around from start to finish. I didn't really notice it until I looked at the box score and I was like, oh my God, he went like what, 7 for 11? Let me double check here. 7 for 11 for 16 points, 5 assists, 2 steals. Like, that kid is going to put up some crazy numbers this year. And I thought he did a really good job. Only 1 3 attempt too. He took a couple of bad shots, but, you know, that's just kind of where we're at with Rob right now. So I thought some good signs from him. He was, you know, his mindset is just unbelievably calm, cool, collected type guy. So I've just been very impressed with everything we saw from him so far.
Yeah, efficient Rob Dillingham, right? I don't know if we ever put those words in a sentence together about Rob leading up to Kentucky, efficiency. And we know that Rob has moments where he's going to frustrate you. That's always going to be a part of Rob's game. But the good that comes with Rob is going to outweigh any of the bad. And you're seeing it now. I can tell that Cal loves coaching him.
Yeah.
Like you can just see it. Like Cal, and that's another note too about Cal, and maybe the TV cameras caught it. I don't know if it did. He was very relaxed. Like it wasn't animated Cal. I want to see if that continues when Kentucky plays. Yes, and he's back to wearing the suit and the staff, and it kind of looks the way it used to. And if that gets you back to feeling like yourself again, wear a suit every single game. And he did mention that he might not wear a tie. He may wear it some. But just an overall approach, Zach, is we're used to seeing animated Cal. Cal screaming, stomping, getting upset, getting angry. I mean, I'm sure there's moments. You know Cal's going to be Cal. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, what I have seen from Canada through the blue-white game to exhibition number one, and I want to see if it carries over the next few weeks, is more of it's almost like it's a more patient Cal when it comes to these guys. It's not as much screaming in an animated style of coaching. It's more so like, I know these guys are really, really young, but I also know that they're very, very talented. And I want to see if that's an approach that kind of continues into the regular season when things start flying at them here in the next couple of weeks, because we know that things are about to get real here pretty, pretty soon.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think he's just comfortable with his team because, you know, the last 2-3 years you've had teams that aren't necessarily, you know, what he wants, you know, what he looks for. I guess, you know, the COVID year, they had all those good freshmen, but it was the COVID year. And, you know, things obviously went topsy-turvy there. And then the last 2 years, he went older. You know, he chose the experience over the talent. And now I think he's just back to, you know, kind of how he was in his first 7-8 years, whatever it was here, where he's just, you know, rolling with all these talented freshmen. And he knows that, look, it's going to be some growing pains right now. That's why he was so excited to see them up one at halftime against Georgetown College, because he knows that he's going to get there eventually. And I kind of share that same sentiment, and we'll figure that out in our FanDuel prop bets later. Teaser. There you go. What was I saying? Yeah. So he just looks, he definitely seems more comfortable. And if you saw Coach or listen to Coach O today talk, even he seems very, you know, comfortable and confident. He's always kind of even keeled though, Coach O is, but you know, he said a lot of good things today. We can talk about that if we want. I don't know if there's anything else from that Georgetown game you're really antsy to talk about. I know a lot of people have kind of been asking. We had the same exact question this week on KS Board about Justin Edwards and his handle and just how it seems like he's kind of loose. You know, I saw him bring the ball up a couple of times with his right hand. And I think even on that same play, though, I think he tried to switch to his left and he just kind of lost it. But I like the idea of him bringing the ball up the floor. I don't know if I've noticed it nearly as much as some others have. So I don't know if that's something you've noticed, too, or caught in that first exhibition or not. But
I think it goes back to what I said last week. And then I text you this today as well, that he's the guy that I think he's going to have his highs. He's going to have his lows. And I think that his may be all over the place early in the season. I think he's going to have moments here in November where he's going to be up here. And I think there's going to be moments where we're going to be thinking, okay, that wasn't Justin's best performance, but there's a couple of ways for him to figure it out and play through it. It's hitting the glass. And Cal mentioned that in the postgame presser the other night, going and getting boards, getting an offensive rebound, sticking it back in, just seeing the ball go through the basket. But Zach, over the course of this season, I'm not really worried about Justin. I feel like he's the guy that's the most different when it comes to these perimeter guys, because are we going to see him at some small ball four? Are we going to see him playing primarily the three? Like, just a couple of different things that he can do on the basketball floor. I think it's going to take him a little bit longer to settle in, where with DJ, Rob, these guys that have the ball in their hands a ton, I feel like it's going to be easier. So I'm interested to see what kind of tweaks and things that Cal does to get him going. Maybe it's some action just to get him a quick bucket early, something like that, just to maybe boost some confidence for him, because I think that's probably what it is. I think he's just thinking a lot, and as he gets more comfortable, I expect him to settle in. One more note, though, on the front court going into this next exhibition, you know, Trey Mitchell led them in minutes. He played 33 minutes. He was the only guy to play over 30 minutes. I think the next
– Over 28.
Yeah, the next guy was what, DJ Wagner with 27?
Yeah,
27. I think so. That's probably going to be the guy that's going to lead them in minutes play, just given what they're missing on the interior. So as you get throughout November, do you have any concerns about wear and tear, playing a ton of minutes with him, or is it over the course of 4 years of college basketball? I think that's a guy that's probably prepared to handle it the most, honestly.
It's part of it, but the main part, I think, is he just doesn't play a game that would – I don't know what the right word is, but he's not injury prone because of how he plays. Like, he's slow. He's on the ground. He's not jumping up. Like, you know, he had some blocks, but, you know, he's not a leaper. He plays very smart. Like, he's not going to get himself in a, you know, in weird positions. Obviously freak accidents can happen and stuff, but if we're just talking about pure wear and tear, I mean, I'm sure that night after playing Hunter Dickinson, well, he'll probably, you know, need a couple ice baths or something. But I do think that with just kind of the way he's built and the way he plays, that he's a guy that's built to go for 33, 35 minutes. And I do think that it's at least until one of these seven-footers gets back, it's probably a good bet that he'll lead the team in minutes. And I'd say 33 is probably where he'll end up going. And then you'll see time. You know, we heard Coach O today talk about Jordan and maybe Adu even at the five. And honestly, I'm not terribly opposed to that. I'm not necessarily in favor of it. I think I'd probably rather see Jordan at the five, just because I know that he's got the athleticism and the rebounding to actually play that role. Like, if you have a dude at the five, then what, you're putting Justin at the four and then Reeves at the three. And then you're talking real small at that point. And I think a dude can bang with all those guys, but, and even to your point about Edwards, like, he had 8 rebounds in the exhibition game, 5 of them were on the offensive board. I would bet that most of them came in the second half. But as I was sitting here thinking about this, I remember talking to Justin when he was a senior in high school after one of his Peach Jam games. I think it was after a Peach Jam or so, one of the Nike EYBL things. But he had a slow first half in the scoring, like, couldn't really get himself going. And then the second half, he picked it up, kind of like what we've seen in some of these games. And I remember talking to him afterwards, and he said, Well, my shot wasn't going in, so I just decided to start rebounding the hell out of the ball. And then all of a sudden, the shot started going in, and he started getting more confidence. And that's just kind of how, you know, he doesn't even need to see the ball go in. He just needs to see something good happen, I think. And then that's when things start, you know, really processing for him. But as, you know, back to the front court there, I think if you have a guy like Justin, a guy like Trey, and then Adu and Jordan, I think you can make that work for the time being. You know, the defense has been something that I've harped on. I think that they might be a little bit better maybe than I think in the front court when it comes to the defense, just because Trey's so smart in the on team defense that he can kind of cover some gaps. And I think this team is going to be a really good just overall connective unit when they're on defense together. I don't know about the individual play. You're going to have to hope that, you know, you got teammates behind you and helping out, but that's where I think you get a guy like Trey that comes in and really helps. So yeah, I'm not too worried about the durability of Trey in terms of that, but it's still going to be an issue. And I don't feel good about the defense until Aaron gets back.
Yeah, it's really hard to evaluate. Honestly, it's really hard to evaluate exhibitions against, you know, opponents that you should win by 30 points against or 25 to 40. It's hard to really evaluate anything that this team has done at this point, just because we don't know what roles are. Like, there, when you go down the list there, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 players played 20 minutes or more. I don't know, like, that when you get into January and Kentucky's in league play and they're playing Florida, they're playing Missouri, or they're playing Tennessee, how much those minutes change? How many guys creep into the 30s? Because then it becomes, at that point in the season, and maybe even more so by the time we get to Miami, who Cal trusts the most at that point? And do you have a couple of dudes playing north of 30? I'm going to say yes, because that's just the way Cal coaches when it comes down to it.
They're going to have to.
You're going to have to and things. So Jordan Burks, though, you mentioned him a moment ago. You were standing there with me post game when we were talking to him, and he's having a blast right now. He mentioned something about, you know, now that you've played the five and you've done it in Toronto, and now you've done it through the fall and into the exhibition opener, are you more comfortable in that? And he's like, yeah, I have no choice. What else am I going to do? And then he said, if Cal wants me to dive into the stands or dive into the bleachers, he said, I'm going to dive into the bleachers because that's what it's going to take for me to go on the floor. Do whatever it takes. Like, throw roll out the window right now. They just need bodies that can hit the glass and some size. And he's one of those guys, Zach, since he arrived on campus, he has played out of position.
Yeah.
That to me is enough praise for that guy. That I've earned a lot of respect for him since he's got on campus, just for because of his willingness to do whatever it takes to get on the court. You want guys like that in your program.
Yeah. Now, he's definitely embraced the, you know, kind of the garbage man cleanup role. And you have to have a guy like that. The only issue is I think there's going to be games where he's going to be unplayable because he's, you know, he's not going to have any sort of, you know, face up game or just anything that he can kind of go to on offense. Teams might pick on him because, you know, like you said, he's played guard his entire high school career. Now he's playing forward, so he's kind of a tweener. He just really doesn't know how to play forward yet. He really hasn't played much basketball just in general. Smarter teams are probably going to pick at him a little bit. But that's why it's going to be good that he's going to be pretty much force-fed a bunch of these minutes here early on. It's, you know, I doubt he plays much against Kansas. I would honestly, like, I wouldn't be shocked if Trey Mitchell plays all 40 minutes and you just see Adu and Justin kind of, you know, sliding back and forth at the four there. Because he's going to be very limited, but, you know, there'll be an SEC game that Jordan Burks wins Kentucky, you know, or wins it for Kentucky because he goes and gets.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
5 rebounds and 2 steals in you know, a 5-minute stretch in the second half when UK's losing or something like that. Like, he's going to be valuable there, and that's why all these early minutes for him are going to be really huge. I guess he's just got to stay in that mindset and, you know, not revert to the, you know, the old high school way. Maybe because I would understand if he got frustrated for not getting his points and, you know, like getting shots and things like that, because the kid averaged 27 points a game last year in high school. So he's used to scoring the ball. He had what? He had four against in the exhibition game, but he had six rebounds and two steals, and he played 20 minutes. Like, if you can do those, if you can do that pretty much every time, Cal's probably going to play you, as long as he hits free throws, which I don't think we've really seen him hit any free throws or shoot any yet. So,
And you mentioned the Dew Thiero there, and Coach O mentioned that buying some minutes at the five spot if needed. And when you look at him physically, body wise, he can do it. He can hit the glass. He can grab some rebounds. He can defend his position. To me, like, valuing the ball for him is another thing. Like, I don't want to see him making turnovers. I think he did what? How many steals did he have? He got up there pretty four steals. So I know three turnovers, four steals. So he kind of canceled that out and then gained a possession back there. But he's a guy to watch, because where I'm talking about role and guys playing out and kind of figuring out who they are. He's the one guy to me that kind of can do a lot of things across the stat sheet. He can score it well enough that he's efficient there. He can hit the glass and rebound. He can defend his spot. He can get 2 feet in the paint and make some plays for others and get some assists. A high-energy guy, Zach. And to me, he's going to be a guy that's going to play a lot of minutes early as well, just because they're going to need that size when they go up against Kansas.
Do you think he could defend a five, though? Because that would kind of be where I would prefer a guy like Jordan Burks, just because of his – just, you know, he has an extra inch or two on him. Like, I know Adu is thick, but, you know, with two Cs, but I would rather have Jordan there at center, because I'm not entirely – I mean, I guess it's one of those things, wait and see, like, type deal.
I think it's – well, there's a couple of things that I'm still waiting to see from this team, and you're not going to see it right now. You're going to see it when you get into Division I competition and you get into Kansas, the game planning and preparation, the game scout, who becomes this team's lockdown defender, who guards the opposing team's best perimeter player. We know that they're going to have to do some things and get creative there defensively with Hunter Dickinson in Kansas here in a couple of weeks. I'm assuming some double teams. On the flip side of that, how does Kansas use Hunter Dickinson and ball screen coverage? Does Kentucky pick on him and do some things? Because I know – When McCormick was there at Kansas, Bill Self ran a lot of drop coverage. I know Hunter Dickinson's played in a lot of drop coverage and stuff. Does Kentucky maybe game plan some ways to get some baskets there and attack the bigs defensively? So there's some things that I still just don't know about this team and where the rotation goes, and you're not really going to know about it. That's why I'm big on throwing out certain dates. And people that listen to the show, they know I'm big on quad one wins and things. But by the Miami game at the end of the month, that's where I think we're going to have the most kind of takeaways about who this team is going into December, where you play North Carolina, you start SEC play. That's the date I'm looking at. I want to see where Kentucky's at on November 14th when they match up with the number one team, who did just lose an exhibition that we'll get into. But then again in 2 weeks against Miami, that feels like checkpoints throughout the season where we can kind of look back and go, okay, we thought this is who Kentucky is, but they're actually this. And that's with any team in college basketball, Zach. Like, who we think Duke is, who we think Tennessee is, all these storylines and things and opinions are going to go left and right. And then somewhere in the middle here in about 3 or 4 weeks, you're going to kind of settle in and think, okay, oh, that's who they are. So there's still a lot of unknowns, but with each 40 minutes of basketball, we're figuring it out a little bit more.
I want to see what you thought about DJ's game, because we heard today before you respond, I asked Coach O kind of, what do you tell a guy about, you know, stuff like that, and he went on to later just talk, pretty much say that DJ's the vocal leader of this team, which I thought was interesting. Maybe not a shock, because we've talked with Reeves over the last year. We know he's kind of quiet. Some of the other freshmen are going to be quieter guys. Trey Mitchell's got a, you know, he's very fun to talk to, but maybe not the guy that's, you know, going to be yelling at players. So I thought it was very interesting that he said that DJ is kind of the vocal leader here and is the guy that's pretty much always talking. But, you know, he had 4 points, shot 2 for 9, 0 for 3 from 3. Didn't have any turnovers, only one assist. But then he had, a couple of steals too, I think. He had 4 or 2 steals. So, you know, he and 4 rebounds too. So he did some other things, but, you know, the offense wasn't there. Just what were your thoughts on his game?
Not concerned. I think it's when it comes to down to it, you mentioned the vocal leader there, and you mentioned Antonio Reeves being quiet and things, and that just being his personality. DJ is going to be the alpha in this backcourt. I think he's going to be the guy that come late January, early February, when Kentucky's putting a resume together and getting into tournament play and in the part where we really start grinding away. as March approaches, I think he's going to be the guy that's going to put a lot of it on his back with this team from a vocal standpoint. He may not have the most efficient nights at times offensively, but I trust him to make a play late in games, whether it's getting to the basket, 2 feet in the paint. I thought he looked good moving and getting to the rim. I thought he was aggressive. It's just he didn't hit shots. He may come out Thursday night, Zach, and have a completely flipped line and finish some of those plays at the rim. But the overall thing with this backcourt is just the amount of options Kentucky has when it comes to the different ways. We've mentioned Justin Edwards, who I still throw in the backcourt, even though he can play some three and some small ball four. Rob Dillingham. The we've seen him in the blue-white game and then in the exhibition opener have a good game. So just Reed Sheppard, like we're still waiting. Reed was better in Toronto than he's been the last couple of times. Like we know he had his moments there. It's just so many ways this team can beat you in the backcourt. I compare it to what I saw from Tennessee over the weekend, just backcourt depth. Mm-hmm. Backcourt depth will carry you throughout the season. And to me, as long as it's somebody, even if it's somebody different every single night, I think out of those five guys on the perimeter, throwing Edwards in there, you're going to get a good night from two of them every single night. And to me, that might be the guy that you ride on that given night. So the backcourt depth is where I think that it's going to – where this team's going to win some games, especially in league play. But when it comes down to it, DJ Wagner, I think, is going to be their lead guard and the guy that is Kentucky's alpha in the backcourt, and I don't expect that to change.
Yeah, he's the floor general. He's Cal's guy. Cal's going to ride and die by him. I wasn't worried particularly with his 2-for-9 start because he was 100% in that group of freshmen that was nervous. And I guess you might not expect that with a guy like DJ because he kind of exudes such all this confidence. But he was definitely nervous. He was pushing himself a little bit, kind of there was times where he was hunting for a shot and times he wasn't. So he's got to get better at, towing the line of figuring out when to go and when to pull it back. But I think that'll come with him. I think DJ is a guy that could shoot like 38% from the field and still be Kentucky's like best player. I think some people might not want to hear that, but UK has had guards shoot under 40% from the field and still be, very, very effective players. I think that's probably what we're going to look at with DJ here, at least early on, but it's going to be one of those things that you just kind of take the lumps. He's going to get pushed around, I think, early on, drive another rim. But he'll adjust to that eventually because he's a very shifty player. He knows how to, cut into angles and go around defenders without actually bumping into them. And I think eventually he'll figure out that. I'm not really concerned with DJ, not really concerned with Reed. I think, Reed went 2-for-6, didn't it feel like he was kind of quiet, but he's another guy that I'm just, he didn't do anything wrong, I thought. And that's really kind of where I look at some of these games is like, did they mess up anything? And I don't think Reed or DJ really messed anything up, but I don't necessarily think they did anything great either. So I think that's a positive in that regard.
And Cal keeps talking about that things are not going to change offensively when the bigs return, that the floor is going to be spaced. You can put two of them in there together. Zeke can do this. And then it might have been, I can't remember who it was of the three that we were interviewing. I know we had Rob. Who did we have? Rob, Antonio and Jordan. And I can't remember which one it was. You probably will remember it. But he was talking about initial takeaways from what Big Z looks like on the floor. And he mentioned that he made some move at the top of the key and he spun and dunk the ball or something like that. And he's like, whoa, I didn't know he had that in his bag. I think it was Antonio. And he was like, we're going to be really, really good if we're doing that at that spot. So that's encouraging to hear that they've committed to the spacing and the offense approach, that they're not just going to kind of throw it in the trash and go a different way when they get their interior back. But like I said, we don't know as much about Kentucky, given that they played, Georgetown College. They got Kentucky State coming up that we'll preview. But one thing that's happening around college basketball right now in October is we're getting to see some really good competition.
Yeah.
And some big-time exhibition games. And I know a lot of those are charity exhibitions that are going to, Maui and things and charities like that to kind of help rebuild there. Tom Izzo, Michigan State, Rick Barnes in Tennessee played at Michigan State over the weekend, live on the Big Ten Network. And then you follow it with number 1 Kansas and number 25 Illinois, Number one, Kansas goes down. Tennessee gets a one-point win. Arkansas gets a four-point overtime win against number three, Purdue. Texas A&M played over the weekend, too. Did they play Texas Tech? Did you see that score?
I'm not entirely sure now.
I know they lost. There's been a lot of high-quality games. I would love to see this become a thing that happens every single year, that you have your power programs kind of playing inside Power 5 competition. But one team in state, they're going to struggle to play Power 5 competition, and that's Louisville. And we're not trying to pile on here, but love but Kenny here we Payne. Go. I love Kenny Payne, Zach, but oh boy, they – I don't know what the over-under win total would be for them this season, but if they somehow managed to get to 10, I would be shocked. That's the second straight year they've lost to a D2 opponent in their home building in an exhibition. It doesn't look better in year two.
Yeah, the Fighting Ryan Lemons took him down. Was that last night? Feels like days ago. That was last night, though, right?
Was it last night?
I think it was last night.
Yeah. I'm sure it feels like 5 minutes ago for people in that program. So a team that's picked to finish eighth in their conference, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, which is probably only a 10-team conference, I'm sure.
Great win for Kentucky Wesleyan. Great win. Yeah. But if you're Louisville, you're thinking, how in the world are we going to survive the ACC this season? And I know Connor there, and I love KP.
I don't even think that's a bold prediction either.
It's not. And I even tweeted it out last night that I see no way that he makes it to year three if this is the way it goes. But then again, if you're that program and you're firing a guy that you love so quickly, but then again, like, I just don't see how it's in this situation to the point that they can't even be competitive in D1 competition, but then they lose a second. I know upsets happen all the time in exhibitions. Things happen. I mean, Kentucky's lost exhibitions in the past. I mean, there was one year I think they might have lost Athletes in Action. I can't remember. It was years ago.
Yeah.
But that team ended up being pretty good, I'm pretty sure, that Kentucky team. So Kentucky lost to Evansville a couple years ago, but that's D1 competition. This is D2 competition for the second year in a row. Not looking good. How confident are you? I know that game is still a couple of months away. How confident are you in Kentucky and Louisville, and what in the world will be the spread?
Oh, Kentucky will win that game pretty easily. I think the spread will be close to 15 points. But my thing with – well, first of all, poor Sky Clark. I feel bad for Sky Clark because that's a kid that I've kind of rooted for, you know, even after he decommitted from Kentucky. You know, he had his ACL injury. It was during COVID. Like, he kind of got the short end of the stick, I felt like, with his recruitment. I thought he would, you know, kind of thrive in Illinois and things like that. And I think he was, like, the only Louisville kid that had a good game yesterday. So he's kind of like in the L. Ellis role there. But I think pure talent-wise, Louisville should be better than four games, or winning four games. Like, last year's team had some talent. Like, L. Ellis was clearly the best player. You know, they had some big guys, whatever, a couple of freshmen. Brandon Huntley Hatfield, if you want to throw him in there as an actual player. But this year, I think they actually have, like, some, you know, a little bit more talent that they should be better than just four wins. I don't think there's any, like, I seriously think they win at least 10 games. Like, I think there's just no way that you can be that bad as a D1, you know, it's a high level. And unless Kenny Payne is just really as bad as we are, you know, even thinking he is, like, even worse than whatever he is as a head coach, which is just so strange to see how, you know, sliding over one chair can just, yeah, I mean, you're just a completely different coach at that point. So that being said, the moment Kenny Payne is gone from Louisville or whatever happens, Coach Cal's picking up the phone and that guy's going to be back on the bench. And I think that's 100% what they should do. You know, you might have to move some stuff around. You know, if you got to,
you can't let that guy go somewhere else, right? As an assistant coach,
you can't let him unless he goes to the NBA. I think that would be maybe your only, like, if he wants to go back to the Knicks or something, because he clearly did well there. Julius Randle loved him. He made Julius Randle into an all-star, which is just why it's so confusing that he's doing this poorly. And that's why I don't think that, you know, clearly they're not very good right now. They're going to struggle early on, but I think eventually this team will pick it up just because there's no way that Kenny Payne is this bad of a coach, right?
No, there's no right? way. And that's where I'm coming from. Like, there's a side of me here. And this is the coaching side of me. Like, it's hard for me as I move through coaching to speak ill of anyone in coaching profession. Like, it's just, cause I know how hard it is, not at that level, but it's hard. Like, especially in today's game, there's so much movement and things with transfer portal and players leaving, but KP is a guy that what he did here at Kentucky, if Louisville turns its back, and I mean, if you win four games and if you win nine, eight or nine, if they get the double digit wins this year, he's back. If they show some type of improvement that way, but listen,
especially if it's like the end of the season, like, you know, let's say they win three of those games of the last five or something.
I just don't know what they're going to do in that league, though. I'm telling you, like them and Notre Dame there at the bottom, and I watched Notre Dame practice this fall, and right now I would pick Notre Dame in that game by 15 plus.
Yeah.
Like, I think Notre Dame is significantly better, and Notre Dame is making strides up the ACC ladder under Coach Shrewsbury. So I just don't see that with Louisville. Like, this, if they hadn't lost last night, if they come out and they're impressive in those games and win by 25 to 30, then you can see it. But nobody's in the building. They're going to have awful crowds. They're going to have awful crowds. Kentucky's going to go there and absolutely beat them down in their building here in a couple of months. Mm-hmm. I just don't see it ending too well. But just a couple quick notes on those other exhibitions. Tennessee went on the road, had a really impressive win without Zakai Ziegler and Vescovi there in the backcourt. That's some of that backcourt depth that I was talking about with them a few weeks ago, which is when you get down to backcourts, Kentucky and Tennessee is going to be some fun matchups. And well, there we go.
Tennessee's talking about Tennessee's got the what's the kid's name? Dalton Connect.
Yes. And Rick Barnes told me about 3 weeks ago when I was talking to him after practice down there, he said, don't be shocked if that guy goes for 40 plus. And that's a guy that at one point in the spring, there was a link and a connection there with Kentucky and things and where Kentucky is going to go in the transfer portal. That was a name that popped up back in the spring. He ends up at Tennessee, really athletic wing. You saw Ganey there in the backcourt. Another transfer guy. Like they've got dudes. They've got backcourt depth that we're talking about with Kentucky. Yeah. It's just that backcourt depth is all experienced pieces where Kentucky's is youth. I think Kentucky has the more top-end guys that are going to go play in the NBA, which gives me the higher ceiling. But that's going to be a matchup to watch. It's going to be old versus young in the backcourt, those two teams. Michigan State, I still don't know about them, but anytime you can go on the road, I think it's an impressive win, especially in October.
Yeah.
And the same thing with Arkansas picking up a win against Purdue at home. It was a good weekend for the SEC, and I'm a big fan of this. We need more exhibitions like that for charities in October and November. If you're Cal, I get it, because if you're Kentucky, you lose one, though. Cal's probably getting – there's probably some talk about it's early in the year and Kentucky's already losing. But
if you think about it, is anyone really worried about Kansas after this game, I would think? You know, I mean, maybe some of the Kansas fans are, but, you know, me from the outside, I'm not worried about – Kansas coming out, you know, looking not being the number one team in the country when UK plays them because they lost to Tennessee by a couple points.
But that's where I'm getting at too with how deep this league is this year. As you saw it, now Texas A&M did lose to Tech. I think somebody put that in the comments there a minute ago. Mm-hmm. But the same thing with Kansas. They just went on the road and lost to Illinois in a game that does not matter. But who knows more about their basketball team right now? Kansas. They just went into a true road environment in the Big Ten. It gets a top 25 opponent. So that's probably an advantage for Kansas going into that game on the 14th is that they've played in that environment against guys that can physically push back and do some things. So that needs probably a note that we need to talk about here in a couple of weeks, that's an advantage. But Kentucky will be fine as they get that same experience coming over the next few weeks as well. But I would love to see that become a thing where Kentucky uses its two exhibitions, one to go on the road somewhere, yeah, and then host a big exhibition game against a Power 5 opponent at Rupp Arena too. If that's something that can be done, people that would be the perfect thing. We're talking about the fans and not showing up as much for exhibitions. Give them somebody like that walking through the door.
With Kizik hands-free shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
And you get a full crowd at Rupp Arena, but It's going to be a fun college basketball season, Zach. Anything else you want to get to from those exhibitions? Anything that stands out?
No, just that, you know, I really would like to see Kentucky do something like that. You know, if you play, I think playing a team like a Texas or a Baylor or something like that, you know, those, you've got, you know, fan bases from different parts, and you'll get a lot of eyes on a game like that. You put it on TV, you know, you send the money to charity, do whatever you want. Like, I just think that's Cal's talking about summer basketball. This is a start. Just you're continuing to bump it up, you know, and now you're in October doing exhibition games. So just embrace it, you know, bring a good Power Five opponent to Rupp, and let's run with one of these exhibitions. I think it's only good for the team. Like, I think Cal's probably, his worry probably with a team like that he has right now is that, yeah, even if you do play like, you know, a mid Power Five team, they could potentially boat race you in your own, you know, place, because these freshmen are just like what we saw against Georgetown College. You know, the first half, they're just not, they'd probably be obviously more prepared for that, but you know, that would be, you talk about throwing them to the wolves, that would be a very tough thing for them to do. But hey, that's how you learn. So I would be all for it no matter what.
And we're going to get into some questions from KS Board. We're also going to talk about Kentucky State here as we get into the second half of the show. But before we do that, Zach, we have to show some love to some of our wonderful partners. The Sources Say podcast is brought to you by Andy Ludeke and MyPerfectFranchise.net. Andy is a franchise consultant as well as franchise owner and helps people find franchises that fit their skills, financial requirements, time to commit, and more. His services are 100% free, and he's here to help if you have any questions about business ownership. You can learn more and contact Andy anytime at www.MyPerfectFranchise.net. The Sources Say podcast is also brought to you by Game Time. Zach, we talked about Game Time a week ago. We talked about Game Time a lot on this podcast. It's the best place to buy tickets, the cleanest app. You can get tickets to any event. You shouldn't have to worry when you're buying tickets. Now isn't the time for guesswork with killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, and the best price guarantee. Game Time does all the hard work for you. Game Time has deals on tickets right up to the start of the event and even an hour after it starts. It's the place to find last-minute seats. You can find exclusive flash deals and sponsored deals on tickets for football, basketball, baseball, concerts, comedy, theater, and more. With zone deals, you pick the section and Game Time picks the seats for an average of 18% savings. And the Game Time guarantee means you'll always get the best price. If you find tickets in the same section and row for less, Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code KSR for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code KSR for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. There's tickets Love available that. On the Game Time app.
You were so good at those ads.
Well, and tickets are cheap for this exhibition coming up.
Oh, yeah.
On Thursday. They were cheap for the last one. I mean, they're super cheap. Like, you can sit.
Sorry.
That's Game Time. That's somebody telling you to use Game Time right there. So, no, Kentucky and Kentucky State coming up on Thursday. Use the Game Time app. Get seats. You can get them all the way up until, like you said, right before tip-off. Kentucky season opener next week. You got the Champions Classic. If you want to make the trip up to Chicago, be sure to use Game Time. It is by far the best app and the one that I use to purchase tickets for events. But, Zach, we also have some exciting stuff to do here on Sources Say tonight. So
let's do it.
We'd love to welcome a new partner for the show this season. It's going to be FanDuel Sportsbook, and they're going to be with us all the way through the NCAA tournament there. The NBA and college basketball season are back. Join FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets with any winning $5 moneyline bet. That's $150 if your team wins. If you've been thinking about joining FanDuel, there's no better time to get in on the action. The app is so easy to use. There's a wide range of betting options, including spreads, player props, over-unders, and more. Zach, FanDuel, I've been using it ever since we were legally allowed to start betting here in the state of Kentucky. Clean app, the lines, the player props, you can go in there. There's so much that you can do. Led to me looking to some future bets for Kentucky, which you and I have put together.
Whatever do you mean by that, Sean?
So going in and looking at some future picks, Zach, if you want to take yours first there and maybe give a couple of things, like you can take Kentucky to get to the Final Four. That's plus 500. You can get Kentucky plus 600 to win the SEC regular season title And I think it's plus 1800 right now to win the national championship. So
correct.
Looks to me like you like them to win the SEC regular season.
Yeah. If Daniel, there he goes. So I kind of alluded to it earlier. My reasoning behind that pick, plus 600 UK to win the SEC regular season. It's kind of based on the fact that I think that we are looking at a classic Cal team that will pick things up heavily in January. I expect us to have Aaron Bradshaw back by then. And that's kind of where my bet is actually dependent on, because if he doesn't come back, then I really don't know, you know, kind of how Kentucky's season plays out. But I'm expecting at least, you know, one of those seven footers to come back soon. Aaron Bradshaw is the main piece. I think plus 600 is not terrible odds for that. So I'm going to take that one. And I also have, when FanDuel first started, I placed one of my bonus bets on Kentucky to win the national championship. And I think I got pretty decent odds on that too. So yeah, plus 600. I think that's a good pick there, especially because I think Kentucky's going to be playing its best basketball come February and March. And I think at that point, they will be right in the thick of things with, you know, Texas A&M is a team that I'm really high on. I think Tennessee will be up there, obviously, too. You'll have Arkansas, Alabama, those classic teams. Kentucky will be right there in the mix until the very end. And I think that they can easily, you know, come down the stretch there and pick up that SEC regular season championship. Would be the first since when, Sean? Do you know off the top of your head?
Well, they 2019-2020, they won it by three games with
Tyrese Maxey. Quickly,
yeah. And the last regular season or the last tournament title was 2017-2018, where they actually went 10-8 in the league that season, had a four-game losing streak there at one point. So, which gets into my prop there, or my future pick is Kentucky's over-under conference wins on FanDuel is set at over-under 12.5. I'm taking the over in that. I've mentioned that I've said that this team, if they play 31 regular season games, I've said it's 24-7, 25-6, that I think that's somewhere where their record's going to settle. That gets you into that 14-4, 13-5 in the league, depending on how they do in the non-conference. But here's a lot of my reasoning. Under John Calipari at Kentucky, Kentucky averages 13.2 SEC wins a season. And I think this is going to be one of those teams. They went 12-6 in the league a year ago. They're going to get above that mark this year. They're going to win 13-plus games in the league. I think that's my pick, and you can get that at plus 106 right now on FanDuel Sportsbook. So that is my pick for a future pick, and that is one that I actually have placed a bet on as well.
Love that bet.
And they've had some years. So some of their low-end years where they didn't reach 13 wins, 2012, 2013, they went 12-6. They went 12-6 in 13-14, the year they made it to the title game, 10-8 with Shea, and then won the conference tournament. And then obviously the COVID season, which I do throw out, such a weird year. They went 8-9, bounced back the next year, won 14 league games, and then went 12-6 a year ago. This is always a program that is above in that 12-13 range. Zach, I think that the backcourt, and then you get a break. You get an A&M once instead of twice. It's on the road. But you get them once. You get Arkansas twice. You get Tennessee twice. It's going to be a tough league, but it's a league that I think that Kentucky's going to play some games in the non-conference to prepare it for. And I think that the backcourt will carry them. And I think that this is at least a 13-5 team in SEC play.
Yeah, I think our bets kind of line up together. Like, you know, if UK wins 13 or even 14 SEC games, there's a very good chance they end up winning the SEC regular season too. So,
yeah, and they also – so Tennessee's the favorite to win the SEC regular season title. But Kentucky has better odds to get to the Final Four. So that just shows you how Vegas views it
when it comes down to it. Come along late. Like, you know, my bet could end up being wrong because I'm a week ahead of schedule. You know, like it could be the very, you know, the last week of the season where that's where they really, or last 2 weeks where they really start to pick things up. And then they go in and win in the SEC tournament, you know, like, so a lot of ways that could go. But
so if you're thinking about using FanDuel, sign up, you get $150 in bonus bets with any $5 moneyline bet. So visit FanDuel.com/Pilgrim. That's FanDuel.com/Pilgrim. You must be 21 and older, present in Kentucky. First online real money wager only. $5 pregame moneyline wager required. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Zach, that gets us into the next tier where we're closing up the show. Get to the board. If you see any questions on there. and then we'll jump into a couple of maybe some notes that we're looking for with Kentucky KSU.
Well, there was a couple that we'll start off with, because I know Daniel's got some pictures queued up of Jaden Quaintance on his official visit. People have been asking about that. You know, we don't have any, you know, official, you know, he's going to decide now, whatever, but Kentucky has been trending as the guy or as the team for a while with him. We saw him at the game. He was right behind the bench there with VJ Edgecombe. I think Kentucky is still in the driver's seat here. You're going to have Missouri's going to poke around. The G League's going to poke around. And the G League's going to be a kind of a bigger factor just because Quaintance has to play 2 years, you know, at the pre-NBA level. So if they can offer him a really good, you know, package or deal or whatever it is that kind of trumps UK's NIL, then they will definitely be a player. But he's UK's to lose, I think. On Three's Jamie Shaw kind of said the similar things earlier today. So I don't, it's going to kind of come down, you know, if he ends up taking more official visits, that was kind of supposed to be his last one. So if he ends up taking any more, I think that'll be a tell that Kentucky maybe is farther away from closing the deal than they thought. But I still think they're in great shape for him. He's a guy that they really want. He's a guy that, you know, I really want them to get because I think he's a stud right now. The VJ Edgecombe, he's really just keeping his recruitment tight. I don't personally think that UK gained much ground with him. I think they're just too late in the game with him. We'll kind of see how things play out over these next couple months. I know he's still got more official visits to take, so his could go on for a while. His recruitment can drag on. And then we also had Malachi Moreno, who took an unofficial visit. He picked up his offer while he was there. he's a guy that, you know, I'll probably be watching a lot this year, just him at Great Crossing there. Sean, I don't know if yours, do you all play Great Crossing, Frederick Douglass?
Yeah, we'll be competing with them in the region for sure, in the 11th region. But we're in the Billy Hicks Classic with them, so you could see a Frederick Douglass Great Crossing matchup as early as I think somewhere around December 7th, December 8th. Now we have to take care of business, and they have to take care of business. So I don't want to get too far ahead because a lot of respect for Woodford County, who we play in the first round matchup there. But we did match up with them this summer. Malachi wasn't on the floor. We also didn't have a couple of our guys. They had a couple of guys out because Malachi was actually playing, I believe he was overseas.
Yeah, he played in Italy.
And then we had a couple of guys that played on the EYBL circuit and some other things. So, no, I look forward to that matchup if we play. Very talented player.
Very
great
good.
Great kid.
That's worthy of
I've got to watch him work out and stuff as well. And I know that that's an offer. And some of the other places that I've been, they've asked me about Malachi and some coaches and things. And like I said, talented. We got talent. They got talent. If those two teams match up and play at some point this season,
KSR will be there.
Expect a large gathering of people to be present. Oh, yeah. But no, I'm happy for Malachi. I'm very happy for him that he got that offer.
Yeah, he's definitely worthy of it. His recruitment's been kind of odd with Kentucky, because, you know, he's at Big Blue Madness 2 weeks ago. We saw him talking to, I think it was Coach O, or maybe Chuck Martin. I think it was Chuck Martin. Saw him talking to Chuck Martin for about 15 minutes after. I assumed right then and there that he was getting an offer, but we kind of talked to him after. He said that UK still wants to see a little bit more. I don't know what the hell they saw in the last 2 weeks, but whatever it was enough for them to finally reach out and give him that offer. He's definitely worthy of it. I think he's listed around 6'10", 6'11", on three, but he's like a true 7-footer right now. He's still kind of growing. So he's a guy that if Kentucky wants, you know, they can go all in on him and grab him. You know, they'll kind of probably want to wait and see how things with, you know, a guy like Quaintance, who's going to be there for 2 years because Malachi is at 2025. And they've got other options in that class too. So, but those were the three visitors that were here this past, or for the game on Thursday. Here comes my cat. There she goes.
And you mentioned Quaintance there in the opening with the question there on KS board. That to me feels like one that, you know, Kentucky's applying the full court press right now. Mm-hmm. You know, trying to get that thing in. Like I said, we're now 2 weeks tomorrow, I think, or right at 2 weeks from tomorrow from the deadline for the early signing period. I believe it's somewhere. I know it'll be Kentucky plays Kansas. Yeah. So it's coming. So expect Kentucky to turn up the heat there, try to get that thing done. I think it's big that he was back on campus for that visit. That sets up a time frame here where, you know, Cal's pushing for a commitment, Kentucky's pushing for one. And if you can get him, regardless of where else you go right now, you feel good about where Kentucky's at with some guys. get another one, get three signatures, three pens on paper in the early period. It kind of gets some of the recruiting of high school out of the way. And then you can kind of key in on guys that you're wanting to finish that class with. And then depending on who comes back, where you go possibly in the transfer portal, because I do think that next spring or in the spring, I think you're going to see Kentucky be a little bit more active in the portal, maybe take a couple of guys there because they're going to need some veteran guys. Because if this team has the year that we think they can have, it seems like some of the guys at the top could be out the door. What happens with Rob Dillingham? I think that's probably going to be one of the more intriguing ones. Yeah. And then, you know, Reed Shepherd, I still expect Reed to be a multi-year guy here, but they could have some guys come back more off this team, but they're going to need some portal, but they're also going to need to finish up the high school class. But I'll be watching for Jaden Quaintance and something coming soon. Cause you know, Kentucky's pushing that.
Yeah. I imagine we'll hear, you know, something more concrete about him here in, you know, maybe the next week, maybe even less than that. Going down some more questions here. We'll pump out a few more. Connor Rigg, he's always here, so I gotta give him. He has three questions, so I'll give him two. I think that's fair. Two for Connor. Let's see. Which lineup combination do you like the most from the exhibition? Is it the starting five?
Oh man,
something else that kind of stood out to you.
That wasn't on my list of things to look for on Thursday night, but I think now that Connor's asked that, I think I'm going to watch Thursday and take two exhibitions, get some film, and then go into next Tuesday and probably give a more accurate lineup. But I think anything with Trey Mitchell at the five, like I just love it. Like I love seeing him at the five. I love that you got a dude that can go four or five from the three-point line at the five spot. With what Kentucky has right now, with needing some size and some activity on the glass, I think Adu Thero has to be in combinations right now, because if not, I worry about Kentucky on the interior getting rebounds. Like that's going to be the thing that probably, if they have a chance at beating Kansas here in a couple of weeks, it's going to have to be rebounding, and they got to knock down some threes. Like they've got to get some points there from the three-point line, but they also got to be able to rebound the position, limit Kansas to one possession and done. I say those two. Listen, I love Rob Dillingham right now and what I'm seeing. So I think that he's gotta be on the floor. I need to go back and look at some of the lineups though before I give more of a detailed answer and see just how much they played together. But those three on the floor right now just feel like that's probably the most excited I am. Just given one for a do that I think it's required that you need that size. Mm-hmm. But what Rob did coming off the bench, he come in and was fast paced right off the bat, making plays and doing things, finishing through contact. That's a guy that's so exciting right now. So I'm going to say those three, but I want to watch Thursday, and then coming back next Tuesday, I'll give the combinations that I like more. Do you have a five?
Not a five, but I agree. Trey Mitchell, like whenever he's out there, I will feel confident. And I'm kind of the same with Antonio Reeves. I think if you just have the two fifth-year guys out there, I honestly don't really care who you plug in after that, because I think DJ, Rob, and Reed can all play the one. And then you can kind of just fill out your wings from there, you know, or the front court from there. So I think as long as you've got Reeves and Mitchell on the floor, I think Kentucky's going to be, you know, at least early on until we get, you know, some of the seven footers back. Whenever those two are in, I'll feel confident. Whenever one of them is out or both of them are out, I will not feel as confident. But
now, when you give me a seven footer in there,
a seven footer in there every time.
Then I'm good with a Justin Edwards slotting to the four, especially if he rebounds the way that he has been. We saw him get active in the glass in the blue-white game. We saw it again in the exhibition. And then you're talking Reed, Dillingham, Reeves. You still got DJ. Like, good things happen when Reed Shepherd enters basketball games.
Yeah.
And I know I did go back and watch. Jimmy Dykes loves Reed Shepherd. Like, holy cow. Like, I don't know if anyone – I mean, I know Dick Vitale loves Reed Shepherd, you know, and things. I've talked to Dick a couple of times about Reed and texted back and forth and things about this roster. But – I don't know if anybody loves Reed Shepherd more than Jimmy Dykes loves Reed Shepherd.
Hey, that's fine with me. If he wants to bump him up, you know, get him some playing time. If he wants to be that guy that gets him on the floor, that's fine with me, because I think Reed has to play. I think Reed will play because he's going to be impossible to keep off the floor. Let's go here. Let's just kind of slide on down here. We got Bagel McCoy doesn't have any questions. He wanted us to know that. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Bagel McCoy at all, Sean. You are? Okay, good. Let's see here. Ooh, here's a good one from Wildcat's Tongue. How would you hide our defensive issues in the paint on a personnel level? How would you hide it on an X's and O level? That's a coach question.
Yeah, that's tough right now, because there obviously is going to be some defensive efficiencies given that they don't have that length at the rim. So from a backcourt perspective here, when it comes to Kentucky guarding the basketball, you don't have the security in your mind as a defender knowing that there's a 7-footer lurking near the rim that can go up and make a block, or, you know, block a shot at the rim. So as a defender, Zach, you're probably – there's more pressure on you to guard the basketball if you're DJ Wagner, if you're Rob Dillingham, if you're Justin Edwards, or whoever these guys are guarding the basketball. There's a lot more pressure on you to lock your man down. No middle, however Kentucky plays it defensively. I think that in turn is actually going to make this team a better defensive team as they get into January, because there's going to have to be more of an emphasis on how they guard the ball. Mm-hmm. When they get these 7-footers back and they get a shot blocker, there were times that Cal was like, I don't care if you get beat off the bounce, because it's funneling it down into our length, and we're going to block a shot off the glass, or we're going to make a play with our length, and we're going to start transition. So having that security blanket there on the back end gives these guys more confidence. They don't have it right now, which then requires them to be more attention to detail in defending and having a commitment there. I think from an overall standpoint, from X's and O's, I want to see how they choose to double when they get against a Hunter Dickinson, how they play that. And then two, be a really good help defensive team.
Yeah.
You've got to have great help. And I think that this team has guys that maybe not necessarily on ball defenders, but I think has the potential to be very good help defenders. They've got some length. Justin Edwards has length to get in passing lanes. You know, Duthiero got some length. We're seeing some steals and stuff there. They've got pieces. But I want to see more on-court action against opponents and how they kind of scheme up what they're wanting to do defensively and what the game plan is, especially against Kansas here in a couple of weeks. But they'll navigate those concerns. There is some concern with Trey defending and things there for sure. I think the trade-off there is how well does he shoot the ball, how well does he rebound, other things there. Does Kentucky get active and get after it with this backcourt a little bit more? Where they don't have size, do they trap? Do they run some full court pressure? Do they mix some things up?
Guys to do that too. I think DJ and Reed are perfect guys to press the guy or press opposing guards in the backcourt.
And that's the other thing I'm watching. How creative does Cal get over the next couple of weeks defensively? Because when you get into next week, you're going to see the competition level picks up. Even though it's not a Power Five opponent, it is D1 guys that can knock down shots, can make plays. I want to see what Kentucky does there over the next couple of weeks. But a great question there. Anything else you want to get to before we do a quick takeaway? Or a quick
review? Actually, I'll put my 2 cents in on that question, because me and Brandon Ramsey were even talking with a guy on KS Board or girl asking about, you know, kind of how do they approach defense. And my thing is, I want them to – I think this is a switch everything type thing, I think, or team. You want to switch everything. You want to – because you've got, like you said, you've got length. You've got guards that are all kind of the same size.
That limits some of the breakdowns on the ball too.
Yes.
And things.
And I think like DJ, he's a guy that can blow up a ball screen. Reed is a guy that can blow up a ball screen. So if you do even need to, you know, kind of fight through, I think that they can make that work. But I do think that switching everything is where they're going to – really mask some of their issues. You know, Cal was talking about how, you know, Trey Mitchell had three blocks, whatever it was, in that last game, and that, you know, Justin and Adu can come over. I think to a point, I think that'll be the case, that, you know, you can kind of have those wings help and defend the rim a little bit, but it's going to be a lot different against Kansas than Georgetown College. Like, Justin Edwards is not going to be nearly as successful sliding over to try and block a Hunter Dickinson shot. As he is against, you know, the 6'5 center that Georgetown College rolled out. But I do think, yeah, and Trey's defense it's going to be an issue. But that's where I think that you're going to just – everyone's going to have to be on the same page. Team defense, like you were saying, that's the biggest thing for me. Like, if this team can slide and be all on one page, I think they really can be a very good defensive team overall. Individually, I don't think there's – honestly, I don't think there's, like, a good – individual defender on this team right now. I don't know if that's a hot take to say, but I wouldn't say that there is a good individual defender on this team right now. Team defense wise, I think they all have the size, speed, and athleticism to slide, switch, do all the things necessary. It's just going to be kind of getting some of those guys to buy in, the freshmen to be on the same page, to not, because that's, you know, that's every possession type thing. Like you've got to be keen on every single possession. So if that's, you know, that those are just my thoughts. I was just spewing things out there.
Well, and here's another thing. So we're watching things defensively just because they don't have their interior there. But this is where by committee you have to rebound. You have to rebound. That is priority number one the next few weeks until you get a Bradshaw back or you get some size there to go on the interior. Now, one thing with Trey, he will be defending out of position, but it shouldn't be too many matchups that he has to play against guys that can just take him off the bounce. Like I'm expecting to be at the five. There should be some more confidence there that I think he can guard out on the perimeter there. Mm-hmm. It, with his primary matchup, where if he was at West Virginia right now, he'd probably be playing the three. Probably what he would have been. And he's playing the five right now at UK. Mm-hmm. And then we'll slide to the four if there's a Bradshaw or someone there. So overall, team defense, team help. I think that this is going to be a very good team defending team. Like I just overall, like maybe, like you said, that's another side of roles. We don't know who they're going to play through late. If they need to run some action to get a three-pointer offensively, we know that it's going to be Antonio Reeves coming off something. Mm-hmm. If they need a bucket getting downhill, who do they draw it up for? Is it DJ? Like, I don't know. Same thing can be said on the defensive end. Who is their guy that draws the best assignment on the perimeter? Mm-hmm. Defensively, I don't know. I don't know yet. And we'll find that out here over the next few weeks. One quick takeaway or anything you're looking for with Kentucky State on Thursday. I know we went a little long here, but just something quick.
They still have Chris Livingston's twin brother, I believe, who redshirted last year, Cordell Livingston. So I don't know if we'll actually see him or not this time. They also have Azeel Blackwell, who went to Henry Clay. He's now a sophomore, but I remember watching him multiple times. I think Henry Clay went to the state tournament one year, and we got to see him play. He was a really solid player, local kid, so he'll be a guy that really wants to come in and kind of have some fun with this game. It looks like everyone else is mostly out-of-state guys. But, you know, it's the same stuff as the last game. Like, you just want to see, you prefer to not see another slow start. You know, you would prefer to see Kentucky wake up and understand that, all right, Kentucky State's going to do the exact same thing that Georgetown College did. They're going to come out and they're going to try and be extra aggressive with you and knock you off your spot early and hope that they can rattle you enough to make things interesting at halftime. So if Kentucky can kind of, you know, push back on that and maybe lead by 10, 15 points at halftime, I think that would be a very, you know, promising improvement from exhibition to exhibition. But overall, you know, I don't want Kentucky State to score 80 points. I'd like to see Kentucky, you know, shoot up 33s. That's kind of, you know, I think that's how the offense is going to have to run at least early on. So those are just some of the minor things I'll be looking for. But, you know, otherwise it's an exhibition game here. So yeah, we're not Louisville. It's not good to worry about losing.
Shout out to an assistant coach on our staff, Coach Fee, Felix Wilson. He played at Kentucky State.
There you go.
A few years ago. And I know he'll be in attendance with me after practice. He's going to make it over as well. So I think the thing that I'm looking for, you know, Connor, I believe it was Connor's question there, brought up the lineup combinations and things. I want to see, and I want to then look back, because then we'll have 80 minutes of basketball that we can kind of look at and see where Cal's went and things. Justin Edwards, does he look more comfortable with the ball, making plays? Does DJ Wagner settle in and have a game? Is it Rob again, or is it someone else in the backcourt? Does Trey Mitchell shoot the ball the way he did in the opener? There's so many things to look for here, but to me, it's consistency.
Yeah.
Consistency across the board. How do they defend? How do they rebound? Because that's going to be the focal point, I think, going into the next few weeks is how do they rebound? But regardless, basketball's here. The final tune-up for Kentucky State Thursday night at Rupp Arena. Before the season opener next Monday at Rupp Arena. Zach, enjoyed it again, my brother. Let's get out of here. How can tell fans where and they can follow all your stuff? This is your favorite moment. You love diving into it.
My favorite. So yeah, you can follow me as always on Kentucky Sports Radio, part of the beautiful On3 network. We're just thriving and driving over there, whatever combinations of rhymes you want to use. But if you want to follow me personally, I'm on Twitter at ZGaganKSR. Gagan is GEOGHEGAN. That is the triple G. Whenever I go to restaurants, my girlfriend likes to make fun of me for this. Whenever I go to restaurants and I say my reservation, I just say, they say, what's the last name? Oh, I say it's Gagan GEO. and just, you know, say the first three letters, let them get that in. And then it usually clicks by then. So ridiculous last name, but yeah, that's where you can find me. Zach Gagan, KSR, I'm YouTube, websites, wherever.
Well, Zach, I've enjoyed the last couple of weeks for sure. Getting through the blue white games and the exhibition schedule, and Kentucky basketball's here. I'll be seeing a lot of you starting. Saw you last week. I'll be seeing a lot of you Thursday on, and definitely looking forward to it. You can follow me on X, formerly Twitter, at GBB Country. He's Zach Gagan. I'm Sean Smith. We'll catch you next time on another jam-packed episode of Sources Say.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.